next week, you want to promote the waste drop-off, shredding, and compost giveaway. So this is always a very big week, and this is from April 18th through 25th. So all Atascadero residents who are payers of trash are invited to a free waste drop-off, paper shredding, and one free yard of compost for this week only. So this is really great, April 18th to 25th. You can go to 3360 La Cruz Way off of Ramada Drive. This is over by the 10 City area. Bring your picture ID and a copy of your bill to participate. But a great way to get rid of some stuff and shred your bills in a cost-effective way. So mark your calendar for that. Next, we have our citywide yard sale. So it's the 8th annual yard sale, April 18th and 19th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. So this is a great way to find a unique gift. We'll have over 100 yard sales throughout the community. We're promoting this. And so you can sign up online to sell your items and be listed on the map. Deadline to register is April 16th. So that's our 8th annual citywide yard sale. And most hope to sell more than buy, right? But this is a good opportunity for that. And finally, the Central Coast Cider Festival is coming up. We had the beer festival last weekend. It was terrific. This is April 25th from 4 to 8. I'm sorry, my script says 12 to 4 here, so I'm not sure which it is. 12 to 4. All right, April 25th for a day of cider tasting, live music, and more. Great selection of food and vendors as well. So 12 to 4 on April 25th. So if any questions, you can go to visit Atascadero.com, and for city-related business, Atascadero.org. Thank you, Mayor and members of council.
All right, thank you. Any member of the council have any questions for the city manager? Okay. You do? Okay.
I just want to do an ad on behalf of all of us, since Ms. Rangel was not here last week when we presented a major award for the quality of our budget, to recognize Ms. Rangel, and who's our city treasurer as well as Minister of Services, and all of us are proud of you. I know I speak for the whole council.
Okay, thank you. Okay, the next on our agenda is community forum, and community forum is for people wishing to speak on items not on the agenda. Each speaker can have 3 minutes. The Brown Act prohibits us from going into a discussion of items that are not on the agenda, so we are not able to get into detail on something someone brings up. Although we may ask staff a quick question or ask staff to get back with a speaker. So with that, I'll open it up to the public, and any member wishing to speak on an item not on the agenda, please approach. And if you also would like to speak, please don't wait. Go ahead and get in line. No, go ahead.
Good evening, council and staff. Jeff Oslin, resident business owner in our beautiful city of Atascadero. I have a couple things. As usual, first would be about 4 years ago, it was promised by the previous city manager that we were going to clean up the redundancy and such and make permitting for businesses easier when there's a transfer and sell. I know we're trying to work on that, but our city's quite busy with everything, but I think we need to bring that back up again. Some of the redundancy is, in my opinion, a little ridiculous. And I will leave it at that, and anybody can comment to me at any point in time. I have spoken to our director, Mr. Dunsmore. He's been terrific through this so far. I will give him the kudos on that. He's had to get involved, and I do appreciate what he's done. Next, this is for everybody and probably Director DeBar. The downtown parking and signage. We're now about 6 months into a beautiful opening of the downtown. We still don't have a couple signs fixed. One would be, I believe, on West Mall, the one that says that you can actually make the turn on the red light at the left. The other one by the police station that says no U-turn, because I am absolutely getting sick with and tired of people just making a fast U-turn up there on El Camino. In an area that's meant for a driveway to come across and not make a U-turn, and they make a quick turn, then they back up and they darn near hit people. So if we could get that addressed, I would really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for those comments. I'm sure they've been noted by Public Works. Next speaker, please.
My name is Luther Johnson. I want to touch on short-term rentals. It has been brought to my attention here recently. And the idea of requiring someone to live in the residence before being able to rent rent it out as an Airbnb, I feel is kind of an unreasonable request. That is interfering with the personal property rights, just way too much. To have the perspective of not in my neighborhood is just not a, is improper. City codes of conduct can be utilized to keep order in the community. Without taking away people's rights to utilize their property that they purchase and pay taxes on. Another issue that has been brought up is zoning changes in the city. If any of the changes affect anyone's property in a possible negative manner, the city needs to notify with a letter and not just count on people to read about it in the paper, because not everybody gets the paper. And there again, you can be affecting people's personal property rights, and they need to have a say on how the city's possible actions could affect their property. Really, the bottom line with this is that the city governance works for the people, not the other way around. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Would anybody else like to speak at Community Forum? Yes, please approach.
Good evening, Council. My name is Reese Jansen. I live on the other side of the middle school, and a few weeks ago, my wife and I went on a walk in the morning and happened to cross by the Printery when it was having an open house, and we were blown away by the project. I've lived here my whole life, and you know, I've heard about the goals of restoring it, and I thought it was just to make an old building look better, but actually they have an amazing plan for it to be a community center. This is no news to you guys, I can tell, but while speaking to the people who work there, they did say that they were trying to get more funding on the federal level and mentioned they were hopeful that the city would assist with a recent application. I don't know all the details, but I'm not with them, I'm not affiliated with them, but I was so motivated and moved by what I saw that I told them I'd come to city council and just advocate for the city to help the Printery with whatever they need. It would provide community classrooms, event space, the arts, all good things. Again, this isn't news that I'm breaking, but just wanted to let you know and felt that it was important to stress that I'm just a regular person who really, really wants this. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. And I think we're all inspired by the work that the Printery Foundation is doing and the progress that they've made in the last several years. Okay, anybody else wishing to speak at Community Forum? Okay, thank you. And Mr. Dunsmore, if you could get with Mr. Johnson at some point and explain the rules for notification of property owners, because we do, that's certainly been an issue from time to time. We do want to make sure that affected property owners are notified when we're considering potential changes to their property, although in many cases, we're making their property more valuable. or I'm thinking most cases, because we certainly are reluctant to ever downzone something. So, okay. All right, let's proceed on to the next item, which is item G1. And item G1 will be presented by our HR manager, Rachel Hunter.
All right, good evening. So, all right, as a refresher, AB 2561 became effective last January, and the intent is to address the issues of vacancy in the public sector. So every agency is required to report on vacancies, as well as recruitment and retention, that sort of thing. So it also requires agencies to go over our hiring policies and make sure we don't have anything that is obstructing the public from applying or from employees to promote. So during this hearing, organizations are given the opportunity to speak. We do have four units here at the City of Atascadero. We have SEIU, which is our local bargaining unit for our miscellaneous employees, Atascadero Police Association, Atascadero Professional Firefighters Association, and then the Unrepresented Professional Management and Confidential Unit. All of these units were given the opportunity to speak tonight, and nobody took me up on it, but they were given the opportunity. We all know vacancies can have a negative impact on the organization as a whole and the services we provide. They can lead to employee burnout, increased turnover, heavy workloads, and just inability to complete tasks. AB 2561 has a requirement that we report the absences or vacancies, and that we also do additional reporting if that vacancy rate is over 20%. We are extremely fortunate here at City of Atascadero to have a council that genuinely supports our employees and promotes retention and long-term employees and doing what's best for our citizens, but also keeping in mind that most of our employees are also citizens here. So as of December 31st, 2025, we had a vacancy rate of 3.4%, which is the equivalent of 5 vacancies out of our 147 positions. Since that moment, all 3 of the SEIU positions have been filled. So currently our only vacancies are in the Police Association. During the evaluation of hiring policies, no obstacles were found or updates needed. When a vacancy becomes available, I will meet with the hiring managers of that department and go over if we want to do an internal recruitment, external recruitment, how long we're going to recruit for, what the qualifications are. And we also ensure that the job description and salary is up to date and makes the most sense for the organization. There's a little promo shout out for our Easter Bunny coming to the PD this year. But retention is a top priority here at the city. We support fun in employee culture here, as you can see. And then we also celebrate wins. There's our awesome finance team right there, right front and center. That was last council meeting. So those are all current employees. But I also wanted to point out in 2025, we only had 3 retirements last year, but they averaged 26 and a half years of service. So between the 3 employees, it was over 70 years of service. And we also promoted 13 current employees. Some of those were part-time to full-time. So 5 of them were backfill for those retirement. So that's a really good feeling to be able to promote 13 from within. The culture here at Atascadero is what really makes us unique. We ask for and encourage buy-in from all of our staff. A fun statistic, 7 out of 8 of our police command staff, so that's sergeants and above, graduated from a local San Luis Obispo County high school. And 2/3 of our fire management, captains and above, also graduated from local Atascadero high schools. And the last 3 of our public works employees are Atascadero high school graduates as well. So they already have a lot of buy-in to our community. We encourage staff to balance their lives outside of work and come together to celebrate their accomplishments outside of the important work they do here as public service. We should all be proud of our contributions because all employees really give back to the culture we create here, as you can see from that slide. That's all I have for you.
Okay, well, thank you. Great report. I mean, the numbers, I think, tell the story of this organization being a great place to work. That very low turnover, I think, would be an envy of most cities, even right here in our county. And I want to thank all of you, yourself, the city manager, all of the department heads, and the supervisors, and all of the employees for really coming together and making this a great place to work, where people, I think, look forward to coming to work every day and being with their coworkers. And these not a numbers say it all. So I'll see if any of my colleagues have any questions. Okay, let's just see if any member of the public would like to speak on this item, and then we'll come back for further comments.
I'm gonna speak real quick, Jeff Hoslin, on this. This is an awesome thing that we don't have a lot of turnover. It's because our city trust our staff, trust our council, our management, and therefore in passing the painful tax revenue bill obviously helps a lot now with recruitment and turnover. We don't have it like we used to, and it's nice that fiscally we're responsible. I always say that, and we can prove that why other municipalities or jurisdictions are starting to have cuts and layoffs. We're not. So again, double congratulations. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. Or anybody, any other member of the public wishing to speak? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to council for comments.
Thank you, Mayor. No, I just wanted to say, Rachel, you'd mentioned that the three retirees last year, the average of 26 years of tenure. And I think currently we have a lot of employees that have at least 15 up in 20 and 25. I know we've got a lot of people. So that says a lot about the environment here and what the management does to keep everybody here and what makes Atascadero a great place to work and live. So thank you guys for being able to make that happen. So great job. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? Because this is not okay, so we do not need a motion on this. This is a receive and file report. And so thank you, Rachel. We really appreciate the work that you're done on and did on this report. And this is a good news story. So thank you. We'll go ahead and move on to the next item. And the next item is G2 is the Home Depot Master Plan of Development Amendment, mostly regarding Chick-fil-A, but other issues as well. And I believe I'm going to turn that over to Mr. Phil Dunsmore, our Community Development Director.
Good evening, Mayor Council. Thank you so much. Normally, we wouldn't be at City Council with such a project, but this does involve a specific plan amendment for the entire Home Depot Center. And this specific plan amendment will essentially finish out the rest of the vacant parcels. Now, fortunately, we do have some great tenants that are being proposed with this as well. And it does also include a conditional use permit. Normally, the Planning Commission would take final action on that. They did review it at a recent hearing. They did recommend approval. But the council's purview on this is not only the specific plan amendment, but also the use permit. So we've carried the whole thing forward. We're also very fortunate tonight. We've got our planner here. Eric Gomez is going to present you the details on this project, and he brought this to Planning Commission. I thought he would bring it to City Council as well. So introducing Eric.
Thank you, Phil. Alrighty, council members. The project that we have in front of us today is the Home Depot Center Amendments. Use 25 is 69, and it's located at 9040 El Camino Real. So just a really quick look at the project site. We're talking about the Home Depot Center, which includes the east and west sides of El Camino Real, where it terminates as it approaches Ferro Carril on the north side of town. It's about 27 acres of commercial development, originally permitted back in 1999, I believe. And so the center has gone through several modifications, several different iterations over the years, several amendments, resulting in the mix of uses that you have there today, largely anchored by that Spring Hill Suites, Home Depot and Staples, and also having a lot of other minor tenants in the retail uses that surround them. What we have in front of us today is essentially a proposal to complete the development of that center. There are three existing vacant pads, which over the years have been envisioned as different uses. And so this is the most recent iteration. And to do the project that they'd like to do, it requires essentially three separate entitlements. The first one being a zone text amendment. Part of this project involves a car wash on that far right yellow block there. It's pad three, I believe, on the site plan in front of you. Car washes are not currently allowed in PD9, which is what this entire center is zoned. It's planned development number 9. And so that zone change would allow for car washes to be a conditional use in PD9. And that opens up the following step of this, which is a conditional use permit, which is being applied for concurrently. That conditional use permit includes that car wash. It includes a drive-through restaurant, currently planned to be a Chick-fil-A. And it includes a smaller retail shell. These are all part of would be incorporated into the master plan of development for that site. So kind of a 3-in-1 bundle deal, if you will. Then you have a lot line adjustment as your final action there. That lot line adjustment will just essentially move some lines around on the west side of the property to accommodate some of the new buildings being proposed. As with all, any project or many of our projects here in Atascadero, there are some nuances. In this case, there are exceptions being requested with a conditional use permit. In particular, they're asking for some exceptions to our parking standards, driveway standards, and sign standards. So we'll go over those in just a second here. So in the next couple of slides, I'm going to be showing you some of the design of the architecture on the property. Here on this side, this is the west side of the development. So you can see kind of on that bottom left side of your screen, I put some stars on the buildings that we're looking at. So that's the west side of the property. You're going to have the Chick-fil-A there, kind of at the intersection of where this development begins. And then just south of the Spring Hill Suites Hotel is where you're going to have the retail shell. You can see that kind of the boundaries of the site are being landscaped. And most of the site is pretty typical semi-contemporary architecture being used across all buildings. Chick-fil-A sticking a little closer to their branded design and less so cohesive with the overall design of the center. But we have conditioned for Chick-fil-A to bring in some of the stone bullhead style design components that we're seeing in other buildings at that center into their building to help it be a little bit more cohesive while still meeting their needs as a national brand. And here's the east side. This is the car wash. You see again, just contemporary architecture for these type of larger commercial developments, tile or tile style roofs, small towers, and then you can sort of see here the incorporation, the stone base and stone for the enclosures there. Again, landscaping all over the perimeter. So we'll talk really quickly about their signage. I've posted the signage that they're proposing on your screens right now. I really want to focus in though on that car wash signage because that's where that sign exception is being requested specifically for that car wash use. Car wash buildings are, you know, purpose designed. So they're designed around the tunnel. They're long, narrow buildings. And in this case, you have also the shade structures that are being proposed in front of it to cover the vacuum area for the car wash. And so with some of the obstructions from those shade structures and some of the obstructions from the existing landscaping, which is nice and pretty and mature on site, we want their side signs to be visible from the public right away. And the car wash is one of those uses that is just a little bit tucked away. And so they are requesting about a 30 square foot or 30 extra square feet on top of their normal 60 square feet max limitation for their signs. So on total, the signs for the car wash will be 90 square feet, but they're well proportioned with the building. And so we think this is something that can be approved with the project. All of the other buildings are standard wall signs. A new monument sign will be installed for Chick-fil-A. Again, similar to the building architecture, we're going to request that they bring some stone elements to just match the center a little better. And there'll be a new Chick-fil-A sign on that big monument by the highway. We'll talk a little bit about the parking reduction and driveway modification now. So first and foremost, the parking reduction is largely targeted towards their west side where the Spring Hill Hotel is right now. It's important to note first and foremost that there are existing easements for this commercial center requiring all parking across the center to be shared. That's essentially how it works out for most of our larger commercial centers is the parking is shared through easements or through lease agreements. But we always try to make sure we understand what the parking inventory is on a site and how much is required. In this case, with the two new uses that are being added, being the retail shell and the Chick-fil-A building, they are required to have 262 parking space on that east side of the center. They are proposing right now 236 parking spaces. We, you know, have observed that site for a while now. The site is well parked. All the facilities are shared. They are requesting that parking reduction based on the different style of uses and their peak hours. And we believe that's an acceptable request that we're recommending approval of. The second exception they're requesting here, a third, I should say, besides their sign, their parking reduction, is the driveway modification. So typically, you know, in the perfect scenario, all our shared sites or shared developments would have a 145-foot spacing between driveways. That's largely to reduce the potential conflicts that might occur when, you know, you have a very busy development that requires a lot of turning movements. And so you want to make sure that there are, you know, adequate spacing between driveways to remove conflicts between vehicles when they're turning in and out, and also make sure that you're retaining that site clearance for any drivers, which turns out to also affect pedestrian safety. It keeps pedestrians safe when you don't have so many vehicles looking out for 10 million things as they maneuver a site. In this case, they're requesting a reduction to 109 feet. Again, we've reviewed this with our public works team. It's really triggered by the need to incorporate a new parking design on the site, so a new parking configuration, and make use of those longer queues for the restaurant that are being shown on the site plan here. Again, we're not concerned. There's not any significant operational issues that that come up because of the reduced distance in the driveway modification. So we are recommending approval of the driveway modification as well. Really quick discussion on traffic and circulation here. So some of the comments that that we've been receiving, but also just one of the bigger discussions from the moment the application came in, was how we would manage traffic, especially seeing, again, observing what's been going on in our community with some of our other more popular restaurants. In this case, the applicant did submit a traffic study for the property. That traffic study, you know, focused on the car wash and the, well, it focused on the entire project, but had specific call outs for the car wash and the drive-through use. And so the drive-through restaurant use being the biggest trigger of vehicle traffic onto the site. They did look at other Chick-fil-A's in our state and here regionally, and use those numbers to make sure that they were having sufficient queuing capacity for the vehicles that would be going to the site. In this case, that Chick-fil-A restaurant is equipped with 33 vehicle queue just for that purpose, and that's only the stuff or the area that is specifically within those queue lanes. If you look at this map, you can see how those non-shaded in vehicles even expand beyond into the new parking lot area. So a lot of capacity there to hold vehicles. The car wash, which was a little bit less of a concern, but that has a 13 vehicle queue for those users, and it also includes the parking for the vacuum areas. Like I said, we've been observing other restaurants such as Sonic, such as In-N-Out, that, you know, get really, really busy and popular. And we've had a lot of good conversations, I'll say, with the applicant, and especially folks who have been helping move along Chick-fil-A from their corporate team and their permitting team. And we've given us good confidence that they're well aware of how busy these openings can be, and you know, have a whole little protocol internally to make sure that all traffic operates smoothly during heavy periods like a new Chick-fil-A opening. We did include a condition of approval in there for traffic control that you can read through in your attachments to the staff report and to the resolution. And we've worked through that specific language with Chick-fil-A, making sure that they're able to coordinate with us during high traffic events. We also have gotten a couple of comments, which you might have seen come through via email. Oh, not what I want to do. Via email regarding noise on the site. The applicant did submit an acoustic report for the car wash. That is the big noise generator here for the project. And so essentially what that acoustic report said was really the concern would be if this a car wash was operating at night. That's when your average sound for this area drops. And so that's where if you had your car wash operating at night, obviously it'd be a major disturbance. So part of the conditions of approval is limiting those operating hours to make sure they know they're only allowed from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., which is consistent with our noise ordinance. And also we added a condition of approval in there, ensuring that the equipment, the noise generating equipment, is limited to, I believe, 70 decibels at 30 feet from the car wash or from the noise source, which again is matching our noise standards and in a sense limiting them to or requiring them to use silencer packages or some kind of those best practices in the design of their facility to keep noise or operational noise as low as possible. As I mentioned, we have been talking with the applicant about all the conditions of approval, sharing drafts of them as we go along from or since Planning Commission. And there were some minor changes, in particular with Chick-fil-A being a national chain. There are always, there's always a need for exact precise language on conditions approval, even when it's not Chick-fil-A. But in this case, they just wanted to make some point of clarification to most of our boilerplate language. As they've worked through some of the questions about traffic circulation and road improvements with us, we've also made some changes to make sure we're all on the same page about expectations as they proceed with building permits. Those specific conditions are listed on your screen. They're also shown in strike through and underline in red in your conditions of approval, so you guys have easy access to them there. With that said, you have your recommendation here on the screen in front of you, which is to introduce for first reading by title only the draft ordinance approving a zoning code text amendment based on findings, and adopting draft resolution B, approving a lot line adjustment ATL 250042 and a conditional use permit with the parking reduction, driveway design modification, and sign exception to amend the Home Depot Center master plan development and allow a car wash and drive-through restaurant and a commercial shell at the Home Depot Center at the addresses on your screen there and APNs on your screen there, subject to the findings and condition of approval. All right, I'll open it up for discussion and questions.
Okay, thank you, Eric, and for your first presentation to the City Council. Great job. Very good report, thorough, comprehensive, and I think succinct as well. So, all right, I will open it up starting on my left to council questions, starting with Councilmember Peak.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. I appreciate it. How many cars did you guys count when we're busy at In-N-Out? How many cars are winding around the parking lot in there?
We do not have a parking count for In-N-Out. So, or a queue count, I should say, for In-N-Out currently.
And when we built In-N-Out, we basically thought it would be like six cars at a time. So, and if you've been to In-N-Out in Salinas, it wraps all the way onto the freeway, on ramps, off ramps sometimes. So, a lot of times when you build these, you don't know how popular they're going to be. So, I know that when through like the different development, the planning of this, there was cars added to the queue or allowing it for wrapping around the parking lot.
Before you go on though, I was going to almost ask that same question, but so you're saying because I wanted to, what's the comparison to In-N-Out Burger in terms of how many cars can you get in the queue at In-N-Out Burger before you're, 10 feet from San Anselmo? Do you not know that?
So we don't have those current numbers in In-N-Out, but what I will tell you is that In-N-Out has continuously enlarged and modified their drive-through area almost every year for the last 7 or 8 years now, as it's continued to get more and more popular. And they've kind of been able to figure it out on their own without significant impacts to the right-of-way. But it's certainly a lot more than what we had originally planned for. Now, so I think we've learned a lesson here by pre-planning a very significant number of vehicles, not only on their specific site, but wrapping around the entire interior of the shopping center and then all the way back out to El Camino Real. We feel like we've overdone it in this particular situation and have a lot of capacity the traffic analysis, which compares other Chick-fil-A's throughout the region and state, seems to agree with that as well.
Yeah, it does seem like it's a lot more than food, you know, In-N-Out when you think about cars at In-N-Out, but it'd be nice to know for sure.
Well, yeah, definitely. Number one is, you know, if this goes through, then there's going to be a couple months of pandemonium. We saw that with Sonic for about 2 days. It was like a flash in the pan for whatever reason. Traffic control, the provision in written for the contractor to have traffic control on El Camino Real would be definitely pertinent. I would also, I would assume, and I don't know if it's correct, it's probably just my observation. I live behind In-N-Out, so when it's busy there, San Anselmo, it sucks. But so when it wraps around inside, it seems like there's more cars in line getting to go than there are parked to go to the restaurant sometimes. Is there, maybe this is a question for the consultant or from Chick-fil-A, maybe that's not the right time for it, but is there statistics in terms of who's using parking to eat inside the restaurant with a restaurant with, what was it, like 70 occupancy, something like that, versus drive-through? Are Chick-fil-A statistically more of a drive-through restaurant than a sit-down and eat a sandwich restaurant? What kind of thought goes into that? You know, are we anticipating more drive-throughs and less sitting down? And then my other questions are as to the car wash, if you'd like me to wait, Mayor.
Go ahead.
Okay. And then in terms of the Sunday and quickie car wash, our case study on the south end of town, which is a crazy busy, tiny car wash compared to this, they are open till 5 in the winter and they're open till 7 in the summer, I think. I go there all the time and it seems like I can never find a spot or they're about closing when I can go there. Was there, when we approved the quickie car wash over there before it was Sunday car wash, is there a case study from the city that we said you can't be open later than 7 p.m.? And if so, why not have a similar thing here? I don't know. When it's cold out, no one's washing their cars anyway. And so in the winter, it's dark as well, but this seems to be well lit up. So just wondering about the history of the quickie approval on that end of town and why their hours of operation are 5 or 7, depending on the season. And then I think that's pretty much my questions as of now, besides on attachment 2, number 14, for page 67 to my other council people up here, talking about site lighting. I'm less concerned with signs. I mean, signs are signs. I'm not sure why there has to be a big sign facing the hotel. If you're trying to see it from El Camino, you're probably more concerned with the front sign. But the site lighting shall comply to the city's exterior lighting standards. I'd like you to clarify what that means with a recess of 2 inches. I went by the site this afternoon and took pictures and kind of just looked around the ones behind the car wash, the pole lights that are along the fence. Are those not to current commercial code? And those are all my questions for now.
Thank you, Councilmember Peek. Let me just answer the first question about Quickie Car Wash. Quickie Car Wash was actually approved as a mixed-use project, believe it or not. It was a small commercial pad that's part of a big residential project. So it did have conditions that spoke about reduced hours that are different. I don't have that set of conditions in front of me tonight. I don't know exactly what they say, so it's hard for me to tell you for sure whether those hours were the choice of the business or whether they were restricted by the actual permit for that mixed use project. We can look at that. But what I will tell you is you do have the option here to set the hours differently than what's being proposed. However, there are limitations put in place by the noise study done for this project that make recommendations for those hours, which are basically looking at our own city noise ordinance and our noise standards that we have, trying to reflect those so that we don't have an impact after hours. But of course, they could be reduced even further. The other question there, I think I would default to the representatives we have here for Chick-fil-A to talk about how they've designed their restaurant, whether it's more for eating in or the drive-through experience. But I do know they do have some interior space, probably similar to In-N-Out, but I couldn't tell you exactly what their capacity is inside. And then the other question you had, I think I'll have Eric answer that one about the
Yes. So the lighting question about the existing fixtures, as I mentioned in the presentation, the original master plan development and a large part their on-site development occurred in the early 2000s for the site. Their entitlement was approved in 1999. So shortly after they would have applied for building permit, that would have included all the lighting for the site and their on-site improvements. At that time, our lighting standards were not as clean as they are now, with a larger focus on preventing light spillover and requiring essentially dark sky compliance. And so part of the question was what we require now. And so lighting fixtures today are required to have a what's essentially called a visor or have a full shield on them. And so if you think of the light bulb being the light source, it means that the component of the fixture that is covering that light source is stretching 2 inches below the edge of the bulb. And so it's fully covering that light source. So the light is either pointed directly downward at the ground, or in the case of more decorative lighting, directed directly at the building. And so with light poles, there's also height standards right now, limiting a maximum height. And in this case, most of those poles probably do not meet that height standard.
So just a quick follow-up to that, and I'm done. Mayor? So to that point, if there's going to be a 20-foot building of car wash in the back, and there might be a wall-mounted security light for a trash enclosure back there, could that mitigate the need for those 30-foot light poles at the edge of the property line? Because we won't need, that's essentially there for security, right? So if there's a smaller light 6 feet off the ground, 8 feet off the ground on the car wash building for security reasons, you wouldn't need those large floodlights 30 feet in the air, correct?
Correct. Yes. And that's something that the council could choose to discuss as a condition of approval in terms of what treatment there is to any of the existing light poles or addition of any new exterior lights.
Thank you. And I would note that, and this may be what Councilmember Peake was referring to, we received a letter from a couple neighbors below complaining about these existing lights. And so even though they're existing and previously approved as part of the original project, it certainly is an opportune time to readdress that, I think. And, you know, even though they're pre-existing, to say, hey, those are, as you said, a different standard, a different time. You have the kind of thing where we require them to point downward, but pointing downward in this case might be right towards the houses that are below the railroad tracks. And so, yeah, I would like us to consider doing that. I'm glad you brought that up. Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Daris.
Thank you. You mentioned that when the entire development was approved under, excuse me, PD9, that it did not allow car washes. And I'm wondering what the reasoning was behind that, if you know.
We don't know. I'd be making assumptions if I did, but I think originally this commercial development was really centered around the Home Depot and retail stores, and it wasn't intended to be an automotive oriented land use. So it was really just, hey, here's a hotel, here's a large Home Depot, and that was really it.
Okay, just trying to maximize commercial
trying to incentivize and maximize the retail developments. But unfortunately, what has happened over the years, we found that the non-compete that's in place for Home Depot has really prevented these spaces from building out as we originally intended. So therefore, that's why this becomes a good solution. These particular land uses don't impact the non-compete that's currently in place with Home Depot.
Okay. Well, with the potential for noise, I hope it's not going to be a problem. I actually think it's probably a good location for a car wash. But on the noise issue, the quickie car wash, that's the one by Miners. Is that correct? Has there been any? I was on the planning commission when that came through, so I remember there was a lot of discussion on the potential for noise and keeping the decibel level down. Has there been any complaints from that operation of that car wash from any of the neighbors?
Not that we're aware of.
Okay, excellent. I like to hear that. And then the last question is on the Chick-fil-A and the queuing and the ordering. You know, like In-N-Out they have someone standing out there with their thing. Is that how Chick-fil-A normally does it? Maybe they can answer. Maybe you know that. But is that how Chick-fil-A normally does their ordering with somebody standing out there like In-N-Out?
The applicant team is nodding yes.
Yeah. Oh, you guys are. Okay. I don't know who to look at. So, okay. I just want to make sure we're not trying to impose something that's not something that is typical with this organization that could potentially be a problem and not complied with over time. So if this is something that they're used to operating, then I think that's fantastic because it seems to work really well at In-N-Out. It really surprises me how well it works. First time I went through there, I couldn't believe it. I've never been to a Chick-fil-A, so now I'm looking forward to going. Just to check out how the queuing works. So that's all the questions I have. Thanks.
Yeah, my question was, how do they serve the food into the second lane away from the building? But I think that was answered for me earlier this morning. So, as somebody has told me, Chick-fil-A is the In-N-Out of chicken. and so similar volumes. So anyway, I have a couple questions, but I will wait until after Councilmember Funk and Councilmember Newsom have a chance.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I too am interested in the car wash aspect of this. First, let me check on the signage. You showed us signage for the car wash and then also for the commercial buildings. If those commercial buildings need to have a separate sign for each of maybe three businesses that might be in there, do they have enough? Can that be accommodated without any additional change? You had a nice picture of that.
Yes.
Oops. We went back a little too far there. Okay, I'll take your yes, and we'll come back at it. Looking at the car wash again, if we can get to it, the picture that shows the car wash and on site and there, that'll do. Okay, so with that picture, am I correct in understanding that there's actually a second, the administrative part of the building is behind the part of the building that we see, so that you have a tunnel for that the cars go through, and then there's the, you know, offices where you pay and all that, you know, get goodies, et cetera?
That would be correct, yes.
Okay, so there's an additional section of building that helps buffer sound from the car wash function.
Correct. Yeah, there's a smaller portion or shorter portion of the building behind that tower that you can't see maybe in this one. Here we go.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
So that's kind of equipment storage, and I believe there's a small office in there.
Okay. And where are the dryers in this? Are they inside the building? Because that tends to be the big noise issue in car washes.
I don't believe our floor plans get into that level of detail, those level of kind of mechanical equipment. It usually comes up at the building permit stage. Typically, for car washes, they are housed within the tunnel. And so those silencer packages that I spoke to usually have some kind of, I think they call them noise baffles, which is a soundproof surrounding attached to them.
Okay. And you gave us some dimensions as to the distances between the car wash and the residential neighborhood that is across the railroad tracks from here and down a fair bit, which affects both lighting and sound. Probably helps them on the sound, probably, you know, makes the lighting harder. How does that 160 feet compare to the distance with the other car wash that Councilmember Peake just mentioned, that is positioned near a residential development? Not all that neighborhood has been developed yet, but is this closer or further away from houses than that development was planned to be?
Currently, residential development is a little bit further away than this particular measurement, but that's not how it's going to remain. That whole area is developing with residential at some point, which will be even closer than this one is today. But with the current construction standards and with the noise mitigation for how these are built, based on the noise analysis, it's supposed to be okay.
Okay. Thank you. I would second the question. Are there any really huge cost or security implications to requiring the property owner to shield the existing lights to current standards for the benefit of the neighborhood?
It's probably a limited expense. We've already talked a little bit about some repairs to or modifications to those light fixtures. When we saw that email come in, I went ahead and let the ownership know, hey, this might come up in city council today, so please be ready to discuss that. I will add that the center isn't entirely owned at this point by one person or one group. The hotel owns their property, Staples own their property, Home Depot owns their property, and these are all shared amenities that they use for access throughout the site. So while there is likely some level of conditioning that can occur to retrofit some of the lights, the extent to which the owner can do all of it, if it doesn't fall on their property, is likely limited. But we will also, I think it's probably good to let the applicant weigh in on this one as well.
Okay, yeah, that I would be interested in hearing from the applicant. Also, the extent to which the car wash building itself will be a light shield between the parking lot and the neighborhood, given the angles involved, if somebody has looked at that, that would be helpful for us to know. Okay, and then, okay. That'll take care of my questions for now.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry.
We can come back.
I never called that.
We can come back.
I have a different spot where my questions on the traffic flow.
Okay.
I had, and that is over here. This is probably for Mr. DeBar. One of the things typically on a project of this kind, we're looking at the study is of the potential for traffic backing up onto the freeway of people who are trying to exit at that point to patronize the businesses involved. My question is a little different. It's about the fact that after people get their yummies and come back onto the freeway, particularly the northbound 101, that interchange has a very tight curve and a very short ramp for acceleration, so that even electric vehicles have a hard time getting fully up to traffic speed by the time they merge in. And so this produces, or it contributes to, an effect that they call the Atascadero curve, and you see traffic backing up. To what extent will adding the traffic associated with these high traffic volumes add to that challenge? And do you see that as a safety concern?
Well, thank you, Councilmember Funk. That's a really good question. The applicant, they had submitted a traffic impact study, and they did traffic counts, not only existing, but, you know, additional traffic that's going to be generated by this project. And the difference for traffic entering US 101 northbound, they looked at the peak hours in the morning and afternoon. So this would be the peak hour traffic between 7 and 9 a.m. And then the p.m. would be between 4 and 6 p.m. But the morning is a little less than p.m. And that's not usually kind of the track. Like, it's an afternoon that we're really concerned about with the backup in the northbound 101. But in the morning, the project adds 29 vehicles per hour. So that would be one vehicle every 2 minutes, basically. And then in the PM, the traffic impact study indicated there'd be an additional 48 cars or vehicles in the afternoon when the 101 would be more backed up. And that equates to one vehicle every 75 seconds or just over a minute. So I don't really see that being a big impact on the US 101 northbound.